They say I'm disturbed.
From city to city, an incredible hysterical panic spread.
I think we're getting into a weird area here.
Will you tell these fools I'm not crazy?
This hysteria.
You can't handle the truth.
His brain is gone.
This is Hysteria 51.
We're here.
The truth is out there.
It's alive.
But you won't find it here.
They're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
Welcome in, Hysteria Nation, to a very squatchy week of Hysteria 51.
That's right. We're coming to you from the lower fourth dimension, also known as Chicago, Illinois, to drill deep into the mind of one Taylor Gooderson.
That sounds like a made-up name.
Well, listen, asshole, all names are made up by someone, but that is his real name.
Says you.
You gotta learn to ignore him or he will press and press until you lose your fucking mind. And then he'll keep going. I went through three co-hosts before John ever got to the show. A lot of people don't know that.
We all know they left because of your quote-unquote handsiness.
All right. Enough out of you. The lawyers say we can't talk about that. Anyway, if you are new to the show, that was C-Bot or Conspiracy Bot, the robot I made to help with the show. Help being the proper word there. And he kind of just drinks and lies.
That reminds me, I have a shipment of bot booze coming later today, so don't run off. I need help unloading.
Right. Right, that's going to happen. My name is Brent Hand. He's David Flora. John is still off trying to satiate his newborn's hunger for human flesh. Or at least that's what I imagine anyway. I don't know. I don't have kids. You don't have kids either, do you? We got dogs.
Hell no.
We're dog people.
Yeah, we're... Well, yeah. I mean, I am a dog person. I do not have a dog anymore, unfortunately, but...
Now I'm an asshole, because yeah, you just actually lost... I lost my oldest dog last year. You lost yours just a couple months ago. I'm so sorry. Now, it's a somber episode.
Sorry. I mean, it is. It's hard to miss the obstacles of, like, getting just incredibly sad these days, you know? There's a lot of...
I don't know what you're talking about. The world is just a giggle fest just around us. So I don't know why anyone would be sad about anything going on right now.
Yeah, but babies eating flesh. I've heard there are jobs for that. So yeah, or like wrangling them.
Yeah, right.
I don't know if there's degrees yet, but there's probably like a George Romero school somewhere that'll teach you how to wrangle a flesh-eating child.
You know, it's a growth industry. I bet Sally Struthers has one of those correspondence schools. What did you go to? Baby flesh-eating? Nah, TV VCR repair, bro.
Yeah, it's a correspondence course. I got one of those. Did you know that?
What's that?
Did you know I have one? I've got a diploma.
You told me a while ago... And I, as soon as you told me that you had taken a couple of those, I immediately went on to the place. It's been a year or better, and looked at them, and then I didn't go into any of them. What was yours in again?
So I don't know if it even exists anymore, but this was probably like 2008-ish. I got the old Stratford Career Institute diploma for astrology and parapsychology.
That's what it was. That's right. I had looked up it or something, but they weren't super cheap when I was looking.
I don't know. It was something to do for me at the time.
I'm sure.
It was probably like $30 a lesson or something, and there's maybe like, I don't know, 10 lessons, if that, but... So yes, but
so you're a parapsychologist.
In my defense, I probably would have spent that much money on just the books anyways, and I got a bunch of books from them. So, but yeah, it went over like astrology, numerology, palmistry, charts, and it's super interesting stuff. And when I came out on the other side of it, I was super skeptical. So I think it was money well invested.
Does it have any like weird letters you can add at the end of your name when you put it out now, like David Flora, blah,
Esquire.
Blah.
If
not, just make shit up.
APMD.
Yeah, David Flora, RDZ. What's that mean? I can't tell you.
Yeah, here's a brochure for the Stratford Career Institute. That'll tell you.
Where did you go, the prestigious Stratford Career Institute?
I could have been an electrician, Brent.
It was that or trucking. Parapsychology, or yeah, or trucking. So we went with parapsychology. Let's shift.
I'm trucking
it.
Along with this.
Well, we are trucking along this week. How's that for a segue that, right there?
That's a very, very useful and you know, multi-tool of a segue.
We are hunting Bigfoot with the aforementioned Taylor Gooterson. I love the blurb on IMDb because it truly captures this film. I want to throw this out. It says, a film that skillfully melds the worlds of narrative feature and documentary to capture this portrait of a broken man obsessively pursuing personal and professional redemption in a world where many of those close to him think he's crazy. Mm. That is a really poignant, it sums it up really well, don't you think?
Yeah.
It's a fantastic documentary. What does Taylor tell us about the film, David?
He's going to talk to us about some of the behind the scenes that he experienced with it. It was very interesting learning about what he experienced while going through this, because he shot this thing over, what, 3 years or something like that? Two or three? And it's just a better inside look at some of the characters in this. Now, these characters are, of course, real people. And you know, they are
real people in his local community, which was crazy.
Yeah. And everything is of course centered around this gym. It's like that's the meeting place for everybody or something. Yeah. I don't know.
They go to the gym, they get their squats on, and then they get their squatch on. See what I did there? That's masterful right there.
You should be ashamed.
That should be taught in
broadcasting. You just add a letter. Yeah, that's beautiful. So anyways, he is super nice. Like you said, the film's great. It's a really captivating watch, you know, even with all the different ones we've watched over the years, I'm sure. This one focuses on the main character, John Green, who is obsessed with finding Bigfoot after having had a sighting. And so it's more a look at how these people act and treat each other than it is really about finding Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But there is some interesting hunting that happens in it, I guess you would say, or some interesting finds.
Yeah, very much so. I think you guys are going to really enjoy this, so I think you should definitely go check it out. But don't take my word for it. You can take the guy who made it, because he's coming up. And real quick, before we get to him, let's talk about the 800-pound Sasquatch in the room. Over under Bigfoot. Is he real? Or she? Or they? Or it? Whatever you want to call it. Bigfoot, Yeti, you know, is there something out there, do you think?
I really am on the fence. Now, there's a guy in the film who's written a book, Pyle, Mr. Pyle. You guys might be familiar with him. He said that he has become more convinced that they are real. But he brings up a point that is my main sticking point is, regardless of what this is there enough of a population to have this species survive? And he said there was something like, what was it, 500 to 1,500 of these stretching from Washington to California, something
I think
like
it was
that.
Saying it would need to be that high to have like
there a, at least needs to
a
be,
breeding
yeah.
population that wouldn't die out because of interbreeding and things like that.
I think there's plenty of room for them to live and not really be seen a lot. I'm not sure about how much food they need to survive. But then the thing that always gets me is there enough to keep a population of these alive?
Right.
And that's what always makes me kind of skeptical of
these As much as people have seen them, why hasn't one been hit by a car other than in Harry and the Hendersons or something
and
like that?
And
you know?
With people, with the technology of today and people's skill in hunting and tracking, still nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. There's...
I'm kind of with you, too. I'll never say no because that's, you know. But it is, as time goes by, becomes harder and harder for me to believe. But all these people that are primate researchers go, well, I still, it could be, you know. So, and I don't mean Bigfoot research. I mean more like when they reach out to people who are studying great apes and things like that.
Study gorillas and orangutans and stuff, yeah.
Yeah, so... Hey,
because gorillas were a myth for a long time too.
Gorillas and and you look at pandas. You know, look at you know these things.
Yeah,
we discover stuff all the time. but I'd probably discover that my pants, at least my underwear, needed changed if I actually did run into a Bigfoot. So that's just me, though. Next up is Taylor Gooderson. He joins us to talk his new film, Hunting Bigfoot. That's after the break on Hysteria 51. Hola, David. Me amo Brent.
Bonjour, Brent. Je m'appelle David.
You didn't do Spanish. I thought if we were going to do this together, we'd do the same language.
Oh, sorry.
that's on brand for us.
I just thought romance languages was the key.
Everything I say is romantic, and that is thanks to Rosetta Stone. You guys, we've been touting these things forever. We love Rosetta Stone, and we actually are users. David, you've really been using it even for longer than I. What's your experience been like?
Oh, it's been great. The thing is, you really get to learn how to speak and think in that language with it. So it's very high on pronunciation too. So you can, you know, learn how to speak.
And you know, our show is all about proper pronunciation.
In that pronunciation. Yeah, that's right. But they designed it for long-term retention, you know, if you don't get the pronunciation right, you say it until you do. And then, you know, that just seeps into your head.
Well, and that's why, you know, this has been trusted by experts for 30 years, and there's over 25 different languages that you can learn, and people, millions and millions of users use it because, like you said, it does seep in, and you're using it with, you know, you get speech recognition and mm-hmm. it hears you. You get to use like the built-in true accent features that gives you this pronunciation, which is super convenient, and you can do it at your own time. And I don't know if you know this, but I'm all about value, and you get a one-time purchase, 25 languages. If I learned all 25 languages, I'd be so confused. Or really cool. I'd go in and out.
But you'd be real marketable.
But literally, though, this is something that we use, and both of us have given the seal of approval because we wanted to do this long term, and it's something that it works, you know, and we don't do long term stuff like this, and this is the one that we've chosen, and we love it. So all you guys got to do, don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now, as we've told you 1,000 times, and it's always now. Right now. Get started. For very limited time, Hysteria 51 listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
How much?
50%. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your unnatural life.
Wow.
Redeem, redeem, redeem. How do they do it?
Rachete, you're 50% off. Rachete. Redeem it. 50% off, rosettastone.com/today. Do it today. After years of fine print contracts and getting ripped off by overpriced wireless providers, if we've learned anything, it's that there's always a catch. So when Brent and I heard that for a limited time, all Mint Mobile wireless plans are $15 a month when you purchase a 3-month plan, we thought, man, what's the catch? But after talking to them, it all made sense. There isn't one. Mint Mobile's secret sauce is that they sell wireless service online. They cut out the cost of retail stores and pass those sweet savings directly to you. Brent is trying a plan right now and says that it works like a charm from Chicago to Nashville as he makes his big old move. Mint Mobile is working for him. All plans come with high-speed data and unlimited talk and text delivered on the nation's largest 5G network. And you can use your own phone with any Mint Mobile plan and bring your phone number along with all your existing contacts. So ditch the overpriced wireless with Mint Mobile's limited time deal and get 3 months of premium wireless service for $15 a month. To get this new customer offer and your new 3-month unlimited wireless plan for just $15 a month, go to mintmobile.com/hysteria. That's mintmobile, mintmobile.com/hysteria, hysteria. Cut your wireless bill to $15 a month at mintmobile.com/hysteria. $45 upfront payment required. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Speed slower above 40 gigabytes on unlimited plan. Additional taxes, fees, and restrictions apply. See Mint Mobile for details.
Welcome back in Hysteria Nation, and welcome in Taylor Gooderson. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And it's nice you can be inside talking to someone and not traipsing through the Pacific Northwest up to your knees in muck and mire. So yay for you right now, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The muck and mire seems to get worse every year these days. So
right, actually. Yeah, before we get going, I want to start by saying when I got into this, when I went to watch this documentary, I assumed it was going to be, I was going to be watching one type of doc, and it was surprisingly and welcomely something different. It wasn't just another let's find Bigfoot film that there's a ton of. It was kind of a deep dive into like the psyche of those that spend their lives hunting it, and especially John Green. That was a great, did you start out to make that? Or did it just turn into that?
Yeah, going into it, I wanted it to be a study of those people who are obsessed with proving the existence of Sasquatch. That was my intention going in, much more than a movie trying to perhaps prove or disprove if Sasquatch is out there. It was really about the people, and in this case, in particular, John Green.
Well, what's your background? Have you done a lot of this type of stuff before, or where was this coming from?
Yeah, I've made a number of films before. This was my fourth film. None of my prior films were of this topic of Bigfoot, but I had moved, 7 years ago, I moved to the North Bend area, and just from Seattle. But it's different out here. I don't know how familiar you are with this area, but there's a lot of people very enthusiastic about Bigfoot out here. And I joined Mount Si Sports and Fitness, which is, you've seen in the movie. Ben Cochran is the owner. He's in the film. And just sort of became aware of a group of people that is really interested in this. And I became fascinated with it. And I naturally like to hike and be in the outdoors. And so when I was thinking about doing a fourth film, it seemed like a natural fit.
Right.
So being a member of that gym, is that what led you to find John himself?
Actually, no. It led me to be aware of a lot of the other characters and people that you see in the film, Ben Cochran, a lot of the other people that present stories. But John himself, I actually knew prior, not associated with the gym. I knew he had a keen interest in Sasquatch. I didn't actually know it was to the level that it is, but I knew he was interested in. And when I was looking for sort of subjects to follow and document, I reached out to him, and the more I got to know him, the more I sort of decided he should in fact be the central piece of it. Yeah.
He was a fascinating character study, all that, and for everyone listening at home, he had a sighting and now he's spending his life literally chasing another experience. And in the film, you mentioned that, men, and I say men because one of the people you talked to said this, it's mainly, men instead of women that kind of have an experience and then let the hunt for another become like all consuming, almost like destroy their normal everyday lives. Do you feel like in something like that, when we're looking at John or these people, is it validation even to himself or belief, or why is it so important for these people that are out there hunting that spend every waking moment in this pursuit?
Yeah, I think that's a good question. I mean, I think it's a little different nuanced perhaps for everybody doing this, but there was a common theme that maybe I've picked up on. I would say more than anything, it gives some of these people a deep meaning and objective and goal in life and really something to live for. And I think, I know this may sound a little strange, but I think for some of these folks, if they actually were to discover something or Bigfoot or whatnot, and the search and the quest ended, that it may potentially even be a negative for them. I know if someone were to bring forth evidence of Bigfoot, that would be global news.
Right.
But it's really about the quest.
It's all about the journey instead of the destination kind of thing.
It brings them tremendous meaning in real authentic meaning to them, from what I've gathered.
I wonder for John in particular, because he experienced a lot of loss and pain in his life. I'm wondering if this was kind of turned into a focus for his grief and that pain, you know, I don't know if I'd say take his mind off of that loss and that he experienced, but it gave him something, like you said, Taylor, a goal in life, right?
Yes. John is a very interesting sort of study, because on one hand, I completely agree with you. The search and the goal here gives him meaning, and it's a way to cope. It's clearly a way to cope with a lot of the trauma he's had in his life. Mm-hmm. But then on the other side of that, John, in my estimation, truly believes that he has had an encounter, or perhaps multiple encounters. And in his mind, it's not, you know, made up. And so there's really sort of those two sides. It is a way to cope, but if a person truly believes themselves that they have seen something, there's sort of another layer, you know, beyond, if that makes sense.
An interesting thing that you just said was the believing that he had this, the belief of it. You showed so much infighting between these people that are there doing this. It really kind of blew my thing. Bigfoot experiencers seem to detest one another, or like he'd say, I don't believe them, they're lying. They'd say, oh, he's lying, he's full of shit, this and the other.
Or he's not from here.
Right.
Or, you know.
Why are they so quick to dismiss each other in such a small, close-knit area there of these people that were there? Because that was fascinating to me, that they're just like, ah, screw that guy, or screw this guy, or I don't believe you.
Yeah. You know, in talking to Bob Pyle, who you see in the piece, and he wrote the book Crossing the Dark Divide, he is much more of an expert in this than I am. I'm really just familiar with, you know, these people that I've followed here. I've not really studied this. But in talking with him, and, you know, I have hours and hours of interview, you know, footage that didn't make the movie. He talked in great detail at one point about this very topic, about this infighting, about how so many of these Bigfoot obsessives believe they are the one that has had the encounter, or will be the one to prove it. And they view others as a threat to them. And it's very common this sort of infighting between them. Again, it's not universal. Ben Cockman and John Green were friendly in the film. They're friendly now. They're both, you know, on the same journey at different levels, maybe, and they're very friendly. So it's not necessarily universal, but there's certainly a lot of sort of bickering and trying to disprove or dismiss someone else's experience to validate your own in this community.
Yeah, it was an interesting, I guess, eye-opening to me, because I hadn't really thought about that. And even when he goes with a small group to go put out trail cams, and the first time someone wants to put out a cam, it degrades into fighting within minutes. And
that was pretty funny. Yeah,
I know.
And it seemed like the way you presented it, the guys that set up the trail cams there next to the road got more footage than John did. Is that right?
Well, so that group, their strategy was to use trail cams, and John hadn't got into trail cams until he sort of teamed up with them. I think one of the most, you know, humorous moments in that for me, and again, it's not really seen in the film. There's a hint at it at one point when they're, you know, they're having dinner and they're arguing, and John says, "I know you've caught the cougar on it," and then he goes on and talks more, and there's not really context for that statement, but earlier, they were trying to suggest that the fact that they'd caught the cougar on the trail cam was somehow indication that Bigfoot would be next. And There's no logic to that. And so when John, later I pull him out and I'm interviewing him and he's all kind of wound up. That was kind of the context for why he's like, these people don't know what they're talking about.
Well, this guy, John, the thing I love, you're out in the woods with him and he's like, hear that? You're like, yeah, that's squirrel. He's like, nah, it's Bigfoot behind that stump. You're like, John, that's a fucking squirrel. He's like, no, you're just blowing me off. He's right behind here. And he's like,
well, and then he puts words in your mouth too.
Right. It's got to be. Oh, it's frustrating, I'm sure, to deal with that at sometimes.
Well, as the time went on with John, I mean, over the course of 3 years, I honestly, in many cases, became frustrated to a degree with him. That wasn't really a case. In that particular case, he said he heard something, and I really didn't hear anything. And then that squirrel goes off. Some people in the screams we've had think I dubbed that squirrel in. I didn't dub anything in. That squirrel was there. And then he gets, upset with me because I question him a little bit. And then later in the film, I really, start to question him more.
Yeah.
But he can be very, he's very moody. He'd be very kind. He's also extremely kind and gentle and nice on the other side of that.
I like the one part where Bob Pyles says, if people aren't used to outdoors, the sound of an owl could really, set them off and think they heard Bigfoot or whatever. And I think he's spot on with that statement.
Yeah. If you don't know what an elk or
elk are horrible.
Yeah. Or a bobcat, if you hear some of these things, mm-hmm. It's terrifying. Then you go, oh, okay, well now I know what it is. It's still terrifying to hear them, but it's not the primate as John always wanted to call it. Was that calling it a primate? Taylor, was that just to legitimize it, to not call it Bigfoot? Because you always said the primate or the primates, almost like exclusively, it felt like.
Yeah. So John, early in the film, within the first 5 minutes, he tells the story of his, encounter about 10 years ago at that point in time. Now it's about 15 years ago today. But again, I have probably near an hour of him trying to tell this story. And what's actually in the cut is only a few minutes. But he constantly refers to it as a primate because when he goes into his description of what he saw, it isn't actually consistent with what a lot of us, I think.
Yeah, he said it was like 6 foot tall and very scrawny.
Exactly. And it sort of turned into Bigfoot when he started asking people about it and talking about it and things. And it was like, okay, it must be Bigfoot, but he refers to it as a primate because I think he feels like that's more representative of what he actually saw, which is a little weird, but.
Well, speaking of what he saw in Infinding and Throwing Shade, he had one of the local artists do a representation. And one of the biggest FUs was she's like, well, I drew it. I made it look like a stump because she's like, that's what I'm pretty sure you saw, a fucking stump. It's like, holy cow, that's rude as hell. That was. It was so rude.
And right, John is so pissed off about that. Yeah. He calls it, is that why you painted the stick insect?
Yeah, right? Man, yeah, it was interesting. That whole group, touching on relationships, and this is something that was very quickly touched on, probably because you saw it and then glossed over. I have to ask, John and Ben, they talk about being, some of the women in their lives and partners, and they're both seen with women. Is it kind of a swingers group up there? That was kind of what you alluded to in my book, but I couldn't get a feel for it.
Oh, the swingers group. I would say that there's a lot of free spirits that float around the gym.
Maybe swingers is the wrong term, but
yeah, I mean, if swingers, I think of like sort of planned couples.
Right? Yeah, yeah, that's probably more like a free love. There's a lot type of free
freedom and free love flowing around for sure.
A lot of hormones. Yeah. It's kind of like high school almost.
Right. I mean, but you were the thing, you went out in the wilderness over and over again, like you said, for like three years, for days at a time, setting up cameras, doing his brand of tracking. What's it like to go into the woods with someone that you don't really know for days at a time to go hunt this primate?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't actually start going on, you know, deep tracks with John or even Ben until we were, I don't know, a good 6 months, maybe even longer into the actual filming. So I had got to know them, you know, a bit more. And I'd already known Ben before filming anyway, and John a little bit. But yeah, I mean, it's different once you're out there. I take care of myself. I have all my own sort of accommodations. I travel real light. As sort of the filmmaker and the storyteller, I actually try as hard as possible, and it's difficult not to interfere with what they would be doing if I wasn't there.
Yeah. Right.
And that's very important. The more you interfere with their reality, which you do tremendously just by being there with a camera.
Sure.
I mean, tremendously, you're changing the total dynamic. But I try my best to not be there as much as possible. And so even when we're out there, I'm not right next to them. I give them their space. In fact, I try not to really even socialize with them much at all beyond when I'm filming. Because I want to keep them in their world. I don't want to interfere. So, it's not like a group, you know, we're a single group going out there together as a team or something.
Yeah.
I like the part where you're out there in that muck and mire, like we said, and he's like frustrated and's like, well, if you weren't here, I would have gone this way. And you're like, but I'm following you. Like, what is me being here doing to your decision making? Like, what's that about? That was a fun part.
He was at such a rough place there mentally at that moment. That was, you know, shortly after they'd sort of got denied from a scientist they were trying to work with up in Alaska, who just completely dismissed what they found after hearing that they were interested in Bigfoot. He was really frustrated. And in that case, he was just, you know, venting at me. I mean, what he's actually saying there, again, makes no rational sense.
Right.
And, you know, I would get frustrated too, as you could hear in my response. And when I was going through all the footage, I actually determined that including some of those moments was important, to sort of acknowledge my presence in certain situations.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I thought one thing you did really well is from the beginning, just of that, you know, few years you're with them, you saw kind of, they were trying new things and trying to decide what their approach, and I'm using air quotes here, scientifically. One of the reasons I'm saying that is, speaking of like their brand of research, they found some hair and brought it in for analysis, and he saw a broken tree and he's like, obviously the primate did this. This is the only thing that could have. And he's told immediately by biologists that it's horse hair. And they're like, nope, it was Bigfoot. You know how that's. And I love that the biologist you were interviewing me, he's like, that's not how science works. They're coming in with a preconceived notion. That's something that we talk about here a lot is, just because you want it to reach to mean something doesn't mean it is. That's not how the scientific method works, but it's frustrating. And in a lot of cases of these conspiracies, these things, or Bigfoot here, they're going after a specific answer instead of just finding out what it could be.
Yeah, they're starting at the end instead of the beginning.
Right.
And working backwards.
Yeah, and I think that is very common in so many people, whether it's Bigfoot or anything else that you may believe in or prone to believe in, if it's true or not true, if you're susceptible to thinking something, people will naturally just seek answers to prove that. And in some cases, dismiss other evidence along the way that may be counter to it.
Right. Yeah. Well, and he was denied some stuff, as you said, from these other scientists, and it changed. And all of a sudden you talked about how you even started denying your requests to go out into the woods with him. And then there was kind of a change, because one thing you talked about, John had abandoned his children. literally on this pursuit. At one time, he hadn't seen them in years. His daughter blamed his illness, this illness of doing this. The son kind of hinted that he thought he was an alcoholic, or it still had been. And then he had a reconciliation, so to speak. His wife had passed from cancer. That was obviously a big loss. He was a millionaire. He lost all his money in the stock market crash and bad dealings. It was hard to see just someone broken like that. If it wasn't for Bigfoot, I'm sure it would have been something else. Don't you feel like he would be holding on to something this hard because he needed, I don't know, like a something focus to hunt, so to speak?
Absolutely. If it wasn't Bigfoot, it'd be something else that he would be obsessed with, something that would be giving him meaning. One thing in talking to John about his backstory and others that knew him, it's evident to me that no matter what he's done in life, whether it had been his t-shirt, you know, his shirt business in LA, is of licensing, you know, cartoons and comics, and which he just made an absolute killing doing, or when he moved to the Pacific Northwest, he became a land developer and knew nothing about land development going in. And this is when he was in his mid 40s to 50s. I mean, nothing. Somehow he learned how to work through all the, you know, all the licenses and things with counties. And I mean, that is complicated,
right?
A complicated area. And he figured it all out and was quite successful.
Going all in, all or nothing, no matter what
you're doing. Until 2008, that kind of came down on him. And no matter what he's done, he's just been all in 100%. And I think this is no different.
It's interesting, you know, the stock market crash, you know, 100 years ago, people were jumping out of windows. He jumped out of the proverbial window into the wilderness. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not that big of a difference. He's not committing suicide, but he's really going out and just ditching his life that he had because of the crash and losing everything.
I think that's the most obvious, clear way to view why he is, you know, where he is. That right. he had this sighting in the same year that, 2008, 2009-ish, during the financial meltdown, the housing crisis, the stock market crash. I mean, it was crushing the people that were in, you know, development, and he was actually in the building houses too. I mean, it devastated him. He lost everything. And so I asked myself this the whole time. If he truly did have a experience, what are the odds that it would have happened then? This timing. I mean, it just seemed a little coincidental, but I still don't like to completely just say that the stories he's making are made up.
Right. Well, you can't.
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah.
One of the things that, you know, happens in there is, speaking of stories you're not sure, is you're not with him for a while and you see him again and he's like, I had another experience. Saw two of them and I got my camera and I took photos. And you're like, all right, let's see him. Oh, my camera's dead. So then you go back in to charge it. Oh, they're not on here. Oh, well, the SD card, the memory card's messed up. How frustrating. Don't you just want to scream? And he's just all nonchalantly, well, I guess I didn't get the photos, is what it seemed like.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because that's about the time in this journey when I, for the first time, I became frustrated with him. Up until then, I really didn't all that much. You don't really hear me, saying.
You don't really hear you in the whole thing, other than the squirrel. And then when you're like, you can see, you're just like, fuck this guy.
Yeah. But when he said he saw two of them, I mean, up until then, I was basing this all off of the fact that he claimed this sighting 10 years ago. And the way he tells it so specifically, this primate, scrawny, I mean, it's just so, you listen to it and it makes you wonder a little bit. It's not like some of the other stories where it's like, yeah, okay, whatever.
Yeah.
So when he brings up this, you know, I saw two of them and they're not on the camera, that's just more consistent with these Bigfoot stories you hear that are just like, whatever, I'm not going to get that 2 seconds of my time. And so when I heard that, I got frustrated because I felt like, John, you're lowering yourself doing that.
Yeah.
If you had anyone maybe believe in you before, you bring this into it, you probably don't anymore. you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, you said something that was absolutely, I'm like screaming it at the TV, and you said it was, he goes, well, I took the photos. You're like, then why didn't you leave immediately? Like, yeah. And like take these photos, you know what I mean? Like, that's what you're getting at. Like, why are you here? Right. You know, sitting with a dead camera that supposedly has the missing evidence that will blow the whole case of Sasquatch, Bigfoot, whatever you want to call it, the primate, wide open. And he's just like, I got rain in my tent. Look how dirty it is.
It's so frustrating. Exactly. I find him out there in a horrible condition. And he claims to have this evidence, and he's just sitting out there in the rain. I mean, it just, there's, yeah. He clearly has problems, you know, but he doesn't have it to the extent that if he truly had something on there, he wouldn't be somewhere else.
Right.
Right. Right. But by far, one of the most interesting things that's brought up, and I think this would go for skeptics and believers alike, is when they did that little tracking tape thing and followed it. You know, it took off one day and they're like, let's go. And it was a hard trek. And they finally found it. You guys saw it in a pile of scat.
Yeah, they use tracers, which are little, you know, small little microchips that you can hide in food. And if an animal eats it, you can track it. And then they were tracking the animals and moving, then it quit moving when they got up to it. When they caught up to it, it was in a pile of feces. Yeah.
Yeah. So out of everything that we did, you know, over the course, you know, the few years, that's sort of the one thing that I suppose creates some, you know, the most questions. I think usually when people say the most, you know, what's that saying? The most obvious, you know, explanation is probably what it is. It's probably just, you know, an animal. Some kind. Right. But yeah, so they bring that, they brought that to Jeffrey Hughes and a friend of Jeffrey Hughes, who Jeffrey Hughes goes to the gym. He's a supposed biologist, according to Ben and John. Again, as a filmmaker, I'm not like a reporter for the New York Times or something.
You're not vetting these people. You're just letting them tell their story.
I'm just following their story and see where it goes and take it or leave it. But according to Hughes, there legitimately is some mystery around this scat.
That's when it kind of got crazy to me, you know, because they're talking about like, well, this scat had 23 pairs of human chromosomes, but researchers weren't able to identify the identity. Then they start saying, well, it could be this inbred tribe of humans. And I think it was you on there that you're like, what are you saying? Like, that's a fucking statement. And they're like, I'm just saying it could be something. I was so confused with what they were saying, and I felt like you were too as they were trying to explain it to you.
It's very difficult to understand what they're saying. And I even asked a question or two during that you know, session, because, and then I tried to restrain myself because I again felt like I was interfering too much, but I couldn't help myself because it was just a little too much. But no, Jeffrey Hume says that scat is from a human. Now, if you look at it, it doesn't look like it's from a human.
Well, and it also looked like it was like a giant, looked like a horse dropping or bear dropping.
Yeah.
Or
something like that.
Yeah. But he says no, that that it's not. And where actually they've conducted, you know, at what lab or however they've, you know, concluded this, I have no idea. I do not know where they've come up with this, but Hughes is convinced that it's that of a human, but that there's something in the RNA that is difficult to explain. The best way he could explain it to me is the difference between an Englishman and an Irishman, that typically you can, you know, from, you know, if you do like 23andMe or something, you can tell your genetic, you know, you came from Switzerland or, you know, I don't know, whatever. He says with this, you can't actually figure that out. Again, this is one guy, from, I don't know. And
this
so,
this is also the guy that really relies on his nose to tell him what's going on.
Smell that? It's equine.
Yeah. Yes.
Anyway, so the way the tribe came around, he said that in South America, that there's unidentified, undiscovered tribes that have been recently discovered, which is, think about that for
oxymoron.
A
moment.
No.
They're in the last place we looked, who would have thought?
Yes. And that could be an explanation for why they couldn't determine the origin of this RNA, that if there was, you know, some sort of, you know, group of, I don't know, natives still out here.
Natives that are opening and eating food and climbing up cliffs.
Yeah,
and
I mean, this is, out, you know, this is why I wanted to make this film, is this, what we're talking about exactly, from being in this community, in this gym, the quirkiness of it, the culture of, you know, this group is what I wanted to, you know, to document.
Yeah.
When you stand back and, you know, try and kind of make litigate it, perhaps make sense of it. It don't bother, you know, that's what I, right. I but it is funny and it's absurd, but at the same time, I don't want to ridicule these people either. You know,
I don't think it came off that way. That's what I was saying in the beginning, is I went into this and I told David, when we were talking yesterday, I said, I went into this expecting one thing and it was different. And I was very happy because it was such an entertaining look, not in the way that I was expecting. And I mean that in a very genuine and good reason, from a good place. It was so entertaining because you're seeing these people that are doing it, and it's not hunting, or it's not finding Bigfoot. You know, it's not this scripted, weird, same junk, and they're not screaming out there and knocking on trees and running after every noise. You're really seeing and doing kind of a deep dive, or the meant to, not into the psyche of these people. And it was more about that. And it just so happened that they were hunting Bigfoot.
Well, I'm glad you saw it that way. And I, you know, thank you for your words. Cause that's, you know, that was my intention, was to do that. Not just to make you know, is Bigfoot out there.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, we don't know if he is, but there's some inbred cousins out there. They're pooping all over the place.
The hills have scat.
Yeah.
Taylor, I was wondering, crew wise, is it just you? Are you cinematographer, director, editor, everything?
In this film, yes. So this film, I did absolutely everything other than the music. The music, Richard Stewart here locally, did a beautiful score for the film. But in terms of the actual production, editing, that was all myself.
I gotta say, man, like, the shots are gorgeous. The way it's edited is just smooth, smooth as butter. It's great. You did a great job.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, and not to sound like a broken record to some of our people that are watching, but we've had a bad run of some of the things we watched, and then you and this one and a couple others we've really enjoyed. It's kind of a great breath of fresh air, you know.
Yeah.
Documentaries like this that are being put out, because it was a lot of fun to watch.
Well, thank
and
you.
Well made. Fun.
And
yeah.
Thank you.
What's up next for you? Do you have anything else in this genre or any other genres that you're working on?
Yeah. Well, I mean, right now I'm working with Xenon and Lee Savage and Tom Garai on promoting this. And it's that sort of center right now. But, yeah, I have ideas for what to do next. There's a possibility we may continue hunting Bigfoot. I mean, John Green is still out there searching. In fact, since the screening, I mean, since the film has came out, it's actually prompted a number of other people in this, you know, community to meet him and tell him of other, you know, things. He was actually out just a couple of weeks ago out in Cleellum and Ellensburg on some leads. And, of course, I'm not out there documenting it anymore, but I may pick it back up again. I mean, the story's not over with him, so that's a possibility. And then I've recently finished a script that centers around a story on cryptocurrency obsessives.
Oh yeah,
And I have an idea for that, and I may pursue that also. So. Those are things I'm looking at next.
Well, that's great. You said this is coming out on February 15th. Is that when you said it's available?
Yeah. Digital release is coming out February 15th. Right now you can pre-order it on Apple, iTunes, movies, downloads. I also believe it will be available, from what I've heard, from Xenon on Amazon Prime and Hulu. I have to verify that, but I think that's the case.
Great. Well, we'll have we'll have links in the show notes for everyone. And well, Taylor, thank you so much for joining us, and thank you so much for making a very enjoyable documentary about Bigfoot and the psyche of the people that are hunting them.
Hey, thank you both for the great, you know, conversation.
Absolutely.
Much appreciated.
Thank you, Taylor.
Well, we hope to see you again the next time, and we'll be right back with more Hysteria 51.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
So that was Taylor Gooderson. That was a great conversation, man. It really is a very enjoyable film to watch.
Not what I was expecting, and I hope it comes through that is a good thing.
Yeah, yeah.
These guys are absolutely fucking batshit crazy and entertaining to watch. I mean, they were fucking crazy, dude. Come on. I hated to say this, but like in one scene you got this girl, there's this one girl that's kind of an ever presence, and then she's like laying on John, and the next one she's laying on Ben, and then it goes into how Ben is after anything that'll fuck him, kind of, and then you find out that they'll bang this broad all the time, and then they show Ben at work and he's like hugging his employees
Brent. No, he's not hugging them. He is groping them. It's awful. I'm sorry. I'm not laughing at sexual harassment. I'm laughing at the absurdity that he gets away with this.
Literally, it was interesting. And also, the whole time that I'm watching these guys separately out in the field doing their science, I couldn't help but think,
it's almost as if you've been doing too much science.
Too much science. Is that possible?
Not in that case. It wasn't possible. It was just so.
It's like Reddit science.
I think why I liked this so much, and is you can feel through the camera Taylor getting frustrated with these people over this huge span of like 3 years.
Sure, man. It's interesting. I'm glad you pointed out how they squabbled with each other. Like the guys that are from the area, you know, they claim, you know, we've lived here, we've grown up here, we know everything about the outdoors there is to know. This guy's from England. You know, he doesn't know shit. And so they're squabbling like almost immediately. Well, why are you doing this? Well, why are you putting that camera there? Well, where are we now? We haven't, you know.
He's shitting in the woods and bathing in puddles. Literally is something I think they say.
Yeah. But you're absolutely right. It's amazing that, and I think that speaks volumes to the, I guess, veracity of the whole conversation of hunting Bigfoot and have you seen this, what, you know, this and that. Everything goes back to, man, they can't even agree amongst themselves. So therefore, you know, something's given somewhere. Something's not right on. You know, some connection there. So I read into it what you will, but if you want some help, it's crazy. It's all just crap.
It was interesting to say the least. And then Taylor brought this up and you see it where it goes down that road of, did this guy really have a experience or did he have a breakdown? And is he out there because he's hunting Bigfoot or because he's running away from the world. And he could have actually maybe seen it, and he could have thought he saw it. I don't know if it matters. You know what I mean? But it was interesting that it was six foot tall and scrawny. Right. And that old broad in the little paint art store, it's just like, I drew it like a stump, because I'm sure that's what you saw. A stump. And you know, he was like, fuck you, yo bitch. You know, it didn't come out that way, but he was so angry.
He's absolutely like, it's not a stump.
Yeah.
You're a stump.
Someone shit on her doorway that evening, and we're not sure who it was. How did you feel about the whole inbred talk? Like, here is poop.
Like, that is such a stretch. That is such a weird, long stretch. If it were me, I would say it's Bigfoot before it's that.
Right. And I love that Taylor was like, I started to ask questions and I realized I'm not supposed to be doing this, but they were just going about it the wrong way, you know? And why wouldn't they send that then to, this is possibly, if true that it's Bigfoot, or if it's true that it's some lost tribe, both of those change our understanding of the world immensely. I think that you would send it off for more testing. Now, they did talk at the very end how they had reached out and more groups were going to come, and this ended right in the middle of 2020 when COVID was taking over.
Yeah.
That does put a little bit of a fork in things, and including some of the testing for DNA, because you had places shifting over to more COVID testing and other testings. So that could have had an issue with some of this, but it also could have just
been a convenient excuse.
Exactly right. Exactly right. And that's frustrating to say the least. And I love it. He said, he goes, I don't vet these people. This is just a documentary.
You'd like to believe them. But it was from the get-go with the first guy, the biologist. It was interesting hearing Taylor talk about how, well, he hinted at the fact that he was like, is he a biologist, or, you know, does he just like run around in the woods some?
He barehanded stuck his hand into a bag full of shit and started squeezing it and being like, that doesn't feel like any normal shit to me.
You know, and feeling it, smelling it, looking at it, observing it, that's all fine.
That's inbred.
Sure. Yeah, sure. But like, he literally, with that horse hair, he was like, you smell that? That's equine.
Yeah, he looked at it under a microscope after he'd already decided, really. Yeah, you're like, well, how do you know it's horsehair? What?
Well, yeah, I'm like, it's fine to smell. That's part of it. That's a sensory thing. But you can't just take something, smell it, and say, yep, this is what this is. Done. That's science.
One, two, skip a what? Few, it's horsehair. Yeah, you know?
Yeah. Now give me 100.
Oh, man.
Yeah, but, you know, on the whole, it's very interesting. I love the idea of taking one of those tracers and seeing what happens. It would have been great. And these people aren't the most well-off folks, you know, or else had they had access to, I don't know, maybe a drone with a camera, they could have maybe caught that thing. As it was running, whatever
it was getting away, it was a quarter mile. Then it was only like 200 or 300 yards up when it stopped to take said crap. And it was a little bit where you're just like, man, I got frustrated, and as I'm sure you did, wanting to be like, go do this differently.
Try it again, or take at least one water bottle with you. I don't know.
Well, we got to get going because he's dehydrated. Oh, God damn it. Yeah, right? It's
yeah. So, you know, this is a learning experience. Somebody's going to see this and say, okay, let's try it a little better. Let's take a tracer. Let's take a drone and have that thing ready to fly. You know,
if we didn't explain. So tracers, they're little strips with a chip in them, and it's like GPS tracking. So you have a small, I know, it looks almost like a stopwatch.
It's like half a finger long or something, right?
He shoved it into an
apple.
It's
a knuckle long.
They'd cut, and it disappeared, you know, and so, it made sense. Though you would have thought if it was a human being eating that, they would have bit in, tasted that thing, and spit it out because it was a long strip of metal or whatever. Right. So I don't know. It is what it is.
It's interesting. It's definitely interesting. I don't think it was it's probably stupid to even say it. I never once thought it was hoaxed.
No, I
because
didn't either.
They really, yeah, it felt completely real. Even, you know, finding the scat and everything felt real. But you were right; like the scat didn't look human. It looked like
the
little clumps
balls,
and
like
flat piles, mm-hmm. and yeah. So, and when he was feeling it, the biologist, it looked like it had hair in it or something fibrous. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'm wrong, but the movement they were saying, he was like, it's zigzagging, it's going straight up the slope. Mm-hmm. I mean, wolf or coyote in those parts, maybe? I don't know. Yeah. You know, could possibly, and he said, I mean, his smell test ruled out herbivore.
I know. He goes, you smell that? No way, it's a herbivore. Like, they looked at him. Even they looked at him like, what, dude?
It's like, but he ate an apple.
Yeah, yeah.
Omnivore. Let's go with thumbs. That.
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting. Interesting stuff. But it was very telling, the scene where he's like, do you hear that? And like, literally, no, nothing is happening.
Well, it was nice that for once they couldn't say,
we ain't found shit.
thank you. Thank you, Spaceballs. They did find shit.
Thank you, Tuvok. Yeah. Yeah. It's true.
I don't know.
But that was like, isn't that the most compelling thing you've seen in a Bigfoot documentary?
Yeah. Well, that was the point. It ends on that. And I'm like, whoa. And then they go, assuming these guys are real anything, they're like, and he's referred to him as doctor, yeah, PhD in conservational biology or whatever they said. And he's making these claims. Those are hella claims. You would think him as a biologist would be like, Yahtzee.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll tell you what, it is supremely frustrating for scientists, legitimate scientists, let's say even, to completely dismiss testing of something like this just because someone says, I would like to know if we maybe have found some evidence of Bigfoot.
Right. That's
like
horseshit.
That's bad, yeah, science.
No matter what. And that happens all the time. That's something we've talked about in here a lot, is the whole, well, if you're going to look into this that I don't believe in, I'm not going to give you funding anymore. Well, that's just dumb or inappropriate or sad or frustrating, to say the least.
That's one reason why I keep with this stuff. I'm like, you know, because I'm completely open-minded to it, but I like to think critically about, yep, it, and give it a chance, man. Like, the whole reason we're talking about this is because we don't know. What's it hurt to rule out one little piece of shit?
Right. I've been ruling out pieces of shit my entire life.
Yeah, exactly. There's an off chance that, you know, maybe something's to it. It could be the nugget of gold in the nugget of poo. I don't,
yeah,
know.
Yeah.
But try.
Speaking of poop and gold, I'm the only nugget of gold on this piece of shit podcast.
Yeah, well, I think after that statement, why don't you guys, the real gold, our listeners, let us know what you think. Please watch this. It is so worth it. It is a lot of fun. And let us know what you think. And you can do that by going to Facebook and searching Hysteria Nation. That is our Facebook discussion page. Also, go to Facebook.com/Hysteria51Pod. That is our regular page. You can play the episodes now from Facebook while you're surfing the internet and reading about all the horrors of the world and being told to kill yourself because you like one salad over another salad. I mean, social media is a wonderful fucking place.
Yeah, that's what people are arguing about.
Kill yourself.
These days. Salads.
Anyway, bye, Grandma. And I'm like,
yeah, see you Sunday.
Right. Follow us on Twitter. Help us grow our Twitter. That's the this week's task at Hysteria51Pod. You can see all the nonsense. I've been tweeting at the NFL, trying to get them to rename FedEx Field the Terradrome since it's the Washington Commanders. So that just seems like Cobra Commander.
Everybody is jumping on the G.I. Joe thing with this. It's pretty
great. I
know.
I really want I want hashtag Terradrome to catch on when they're playing there next year.
You know, the marketing team for them was like, we've got to pick something that's ironclad. People cannot make fun of this. We can't. And then, yeah, and then they pick that, and it's like immediately
it's either G.I. Joe or the commies. They're like, well, shit. Brad, you're
somebody's
fired.
Getting fired. Yeah.
Yeah. Patreon.com/stair51pod. Find episodes, extra episodes, Up All Nights, Mad Blur, Hysterias, Cafeteria 51s, all that jazz. Voicemail. Leave David a voicemail. Sing something sexy to him. 773.
Please.
669-7277. We're going to do one of these episodes here very soon where we just play those and react to them. Half of them won't be nice. To you, David, so you can have just a natural reaction to shit that you weren't part of.
Yeah. make me feel pretty, yeah. Like Maria.
Yes. If you figure out anything, let us know.
If you
figure it out and you find a tracer in there, you might be an inbred. Number one. But if you forget any of this, hysteria51.com. That is your place to go to. Tell a friend. Tell two friends. Tell an enemy. Tell a woodland person who poops on hills. That's my takeaway. Watch this. Right. Go to the show notes. Find out where you can watch it. Watch it. It's entertaining to say the least.
Yeah, it's a good watch.
With that said, I'm in Brent.
I have been David.
He's been Conspiracy Bot.
Stay woke, meet sex.
It was terrible. It was just terrible. I'll never get over it as long as I live.
That's it for another edition of Hysteria 51. John and Brent will be back next week with yet more of the unexplained, the unexplored, and the unheard of. Oh, if it's unheard of, how will they know about it? Anyway, if you want to suggest a topic, give us your thoughts, or just make fun of Conspiracy Bot, that's my favourite, join us in our Facebook discussion group, Hysteria Nation. Just log on to Facebook and search Hysteria Nation, or you can always tweet us at Hysteria51Pod.
You've been listening to a fourth-hand shine.